laws and the rights.
Welcome back to part two of the Thursday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson and producers Dave Scott and Stephanie Collins. I've known Alan Davis for a long time, but I've not known him in this capacity. So let me just share a little bit about him. He is a member of a group called, listen to this, Patriotic Millionaires. It almost sounds like an oxymoron. And president of the Leonard and Sophie Davis Fund. He was a founder and president of the Conservatory Paper Company, a wholesale distributor of recycled paper. But we're not talking about his past. We're sort of working more on the patriotic millionaires angle. And we're going to ask Alan to talk about two things. One was a challenge that you just put out. And philanthropy.com wrote the headline, New Pledge Asks Donors to Step Up Giving Amid Pandemic. And you have launched something called the Crisis Charitable Commitment. Now, I love this idea, but before we even get into the Crisis Charitable Commitment, let's talk a little bit about patriotic millionaires, because I think we need to put you in sort of a silo by yourself, not by yourself, but with these other patriotic millionaires, because if we understand who you are and what your ethic is and what drives you, then the fact that you've come up with this crisis charitable commitment makes so much sense, because it's an extension of really what you believe and how you want to protect your nation. And that's really what you want to do. Yeah, so welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Arnie. It's great to be here. So yes, Patriotic Millionaires is a group of millionaires who believe that the income inequality we're experiencing in this country is unacceptable and unpatriotic and unhealthy for our democracy and for our economy. So we're looking for ways to change that. And that includes a whole series of ideas, proposals like tax policy changes, like minimum wage, like extended health benefits, all the things that I think many of your listeners and certainly I think are essential ingredients for the kind of America we really think we're supposed to be.
Right.
So that's what the group does. And this idea of the charitable piece is just a smaller piece of a larger picture, something I call excessive wealth disorder.
I love that. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, this is the problem we have, that there's just too much money. There are people sitting on just too much money, and it's a very unhealthy situation. It just, I mean, the number that, I have trouble sleeping at night thinking about this, 650 billionaires. We have 650 billionaires in the United States. They sit on $5 trillion. Trillion, that's like 12 zeros.
Yeah.
It's a huge number. And, put it in perspective, that's twice as much as our government currently is spending to address the crisis. So it's a huge, huge amount of wealth. And, did anybody ever think there'd be a day when somebody could earn $12 billion in one day, as Jeff Bezos did? It's unfathomable. So we're trying to chip away at this
let me just sort of remind everyone, no one is saying that they're going to strip you of all your wealth. I mean, if Jeff Bezos had to donate or pay taxes and pay an additional $20 billion even, because you know how many billions he'd still have left? And I want to remind everyone, what could a billionaire do if they had to pay a little more in taxes? What could they not do? What houses could they not buy? What countries could they not buy? You know, what jewels? People don't get it. We are not stripping anyone of wealth. What we are saying is there's something wrong when all the wealth, especially in the last decade, instead of it being sort of spread around so that we can make people economically stable, to make people healthy, to make us sort of less frightened about the future, but when all of it goes to a handful of people, not only are they not investing it because they've got too much of it, but they are disinvesting in everybody else.
I think that's totally correct. And I mean, you could take an extreme position, or not even that extreme, but AOC would say every billionaire is a policy failure. I think there's some truth to that. But you're exactly right. We're not saying, none of the things I've been involved with are saying, take all their money. But if you just think about the fact that, let's say you wanted to leave every billionaire with $1 billion, that would still leave $4.5 trillion that I think could be better spent. I think it could be better spent on things like safe drinking water or paying people a fair wage. I mean,
Alan, tell me, so you've been hanging out with these billionaires and these millionaires your whole life. I actually said that, did they ever read the story of Midas, King Midas? You know, King Midas, everything he touched, he wanted to turn to gold until he touched his daughter, okay? And then he realized what's the point. So here's my question that I would love to sit down with all these billionaires and ask them. What good is it to have all this money if so many people are sick? What good is it to have all this money if the climate is eroding the stability of your world? What good is it having all this money if you can't go out to dinner in all your cities because your cities are vacant, because there is, you know, there's instability. Maybe what's his name wants to go to Mars. I'm just looking at the rest of us who are kind of sort of stuck on planet Earth. I am trying to figure out what it is about the allure of this money that they are willing to sacrifice really everyone's quality of life, including theirs, Alan. Including theirs.
I totally agree with you, Arnie. I mean, I think there's a case to be made that there's a certain sense of billionaires being psychopaths, that they have completely been disconnected from the real world and basic human feelings about other people. So it's not, I mean, there are certainly exceptions to the rule, but what's interesting, I think, is that one of the ways a billionaire expresses their goodness, or at least covers up for their hoarding, is to make charitable contributions.
Yes.
And so we see very splashy headlines about a billionaire giving $10 million for this or $20 million for that. And what people don't seem to understand is that that's generally like, that's like 1 month's income. That's not like being generous. Like when, you know, when the church used to tithe people and say, we're giving 10% of your income. I mean, this is money that I call it stoop change. I mean, they wouldn't notice the 10 million, like you were saying before, that they wouldn't notice the $10 million is missing. Basically, this effort that we call the crisis charitable commitment is an effort to try to get people to actually step up and meet their responsibility. And if they don't meet it during this pandemic, this is the rainy day. You know, we're here. This is it. And people are suffering in so many different ways. There are so many tremendous needs. And for somebody to sit on the sidelines and think this is a business as usual day is truly a tragedy. So we're trying to encourage people to recognize their responsibility, show their leadership, step up to the plate, and give generously.
You also wrote an op-ed, and it was about sort of, you sort of took to task some of these very well-known foundations. The one that sort of jumped off the plate was Ford. This is the part, tell my audience how much money these foundations have made in the last decade. They didn't have a tough time in the last 10 years. They've had a remarkable time in the last 10 years. And ostensibly, a foundation is created to give money away. Their job is to take care of people, to be charitable, to give money away. So we know that they now are sitting on a Mount Everest of cash. They've done incredibly well. Tell what Ford was suggesting they wanted to do. Because at first I went, well, that sounds interesting. And then when you explained it in your op-ed, I mean, my middle fingers went up in stereo. So I want you to tell my audience a little bit about these foundations and this clever idea that ain't so clever.
Well, it was reported in the New York Times and other places that five major foundations looked like they were stepping up to the plate and dipping into their endowment. So a foundation has this stash of money that they sit on, and the earnings from that endowment is what they make their charitable contributions from. So Ford was a sort of a leader in this effort and made a big splash by saying that the law requires them to give away 5% of their endowment every year, which was set up back in the late 60s when a foundation thought maybe we'll earn 6%, maybe we'll earn 7%. And so that will keep us sort of even. But since that time, we've been earning 10% a year, every year. It's, I mean, there have been some exceptions, but overall, 10% a year, and the foundations are still just giving away 5% of their wealth. So Ford, facing this incredible crisis, and they are a leader in the field of caring, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Healthcare is big for Ford.
Yeah. They said that we're going to increase our giving, but in order to increase our giving, we're not going to dip into our endowment. We're going to go ask people to lend us money to pay for it. And I thought, wow, that's kind of nervy. Like, they have made, in the last 3 years, they have made $2 billion, and they're increasing their giving by $500 million. Well, if you think about that, that's only like 25% of what they made in the last 3 years. So that did not strike me as very generous. And this is true of the foundation world in general. There's very few of these. There are billionaire foundations. There are 80 foundations that are sitting on $1 billion or more. And so far, none of them are dipping into their endowments, even though they've been making money hand over fist.
I know you're not an accountant or a lawyer, but I just got to ask. So what is the financial angle on borrowing money when you're sitting on a mountain of cash? Because if you're borrowing money, where are you borrowing the money from? What's the payback? What's the tax write-off? I mean, I'm playing this out and I'm thinking they're going to make money on borrowing the money because they don't want to touch their mountain of money. I mean, this is like, you know why I'm so upset about this, Alan? Because I wrote a lot on my Facebook page about just the amazing stuff in your articles. I was just like so out of my mind. And I'm thinking, remember what the GOP is saying, that extra $600 a week to those unemployed people, that's too much money. It's too rich. You can't have so much. And then I'm reading your article and I want a split screen. I want people to see this story and then see the extra $600. And the reason I say this, and you're now hearing it more and more, I've been saying it now for months, is that every single dime of that unemployment money is going into the economy. It's making those billionaires even more rich, okay? Amazon is doing well in part because of that $600, because they're spending every dime, every dime.
Let me just tell you how well they're doing. The billionaires have made $500 billion since the crisis began. $500 billion since the crisis began. Yes, you can get angry about this.
I do want to grab my pitchfork. I will tell you, I got a couple in the garage, so I'm going to keep thinking. I'm going to get a picture with the pitch. But I want people to know I'm not angry that they're rich. I'm not even jealous that they're rich. I am just asking, what is wealth for? Again, as I pointed out before, and I'm also saying, at what point in time do you have enough? Is there ever an answer to that? You're going to be disappointed in me. Hillary Clinton never came on the air with me when she ran for president, and I know why. Because she heard the question I wanted to ask her, and this is absolutely the truth. The question I wanted to ask her, Alan, is when she left the State Department, and she spent 15 months before she finally announced that she was running for president, and she basically went on the speaking market, and she raised $21 million. Not for her campaign, but for her. At the time she did that, she and Bill were actually pretty rich already, all right? So it's not like the $21 million was something they needed because she was only earning maybe $200,000 as Secretary of State. I don't know what they earned that. But it was because she wanted more money. And I wanted to ask her the question, you were already rich when you left the State Department. When are you rich enough? And she's not even close to being the billionaires we're talking about. She's not Jeff Bezos who makes $13 or $12 billion in one day. And the reason that has to be asked is, it's not only about your selfishness, it's about how can you look at people struggling during a pandemic and feel that there's any sense of right by sitting on all this money?
That's exactly what the Crisis Charitable Commitment is all about. And we're focused at a group of people that are, we call the 0.1%. That's 0.1% of families in America have wealth of $25 million or more, $25 million or more. There's 150,000 of us who have that. And we're asking them to, just as you're suggesting, step up to the plate, give back. This is the time, if you're ever going to do it, if you're going to show that you care at all about the American public, this is your chance to give back. And there are, you can give back in, we're saying you can give back in any number of ways, any way you want to, because virtually any money you put out into the nonprofit sector right now is going to do good. I mean, whether it be for food banks, or whether it's to support Black Lives Matter, or whether it's to help it with hospitals, or even universities, or everybody is hurting. Theaters are hurting. Yeah. Everybody is hurting. So just give back. It's time to give back. It's exactly your question. You know, when is enough enough? And this is particularly troubling because of the amount of money people have been making for years, as long as anybody can remember. The market has been in a boom cycle, and wealthy people are the major beneficiaries of that, and which is part of the reasons our wealth gap has grown so much. Taxes is the other reason, but we have to give back. That's what this is all about. So we're trying to find people to say, yeah, I'm signing on. I'm with you. We're going to do our, we're going to take our responsibility seriously. If you have money, you have privilege and you have responsibility. So we're trying to tap into the responsibility part now.
It's always interesting to me. And I think that there, you've seen the rise in the disconnect in some ways, as we've seen this sort of the rise of the multinational. And that, you know, you could then sort of pocket your money in other places. You could create jobs other places. So the idea of being a patriot, the idea of connection to place has really begun to be stretched, because I don't think they really see themselves as Americans. I see themselves as billionaires, but there doesn't necessarily have to be a nationality connected to that billion. And when there isn't a nationality connected to that billion, there isn't that sense of community. There isn't that sense of obligation. I live in Concord now, and I've lived all over the state of New Hampshire, and I've lived in different places of the country. And I've always told people that was for the first time in my life, I feel like I've come home. All right. I really feel a sense of home. And I always thought that I wanted to be in Concord to be the governor. What a fool. I wanted to be in Concord because I love this little city. And I obviously love my state. It drives me crazy sometimes, but I love my state. So there's a real connection and a sense that what is it within the Jewish community? The idea is you make your heaven here. And if you make your heaven here, then you have an obligation to make these investments, to take care of these people. You talked about what the Ford Foundation had come up with, and a number of other of these larger foundations had come up with the idea that instead of spending their money, they're going to borrow in sort of in order to maintain it. I have an idea. Why don't we change that 5% rule that was established in 1960, whatever, and why don't we make it a 10 or 15% rule? Why don't we, if there's one thing to tackle, you're going to be sitting on that cash. I understand you want to have that cash for a while. In a way, it's also your power as well as your investment. But why are we in a, you know, 50-year-old or 60-year-old mode when, in fact, we should recognize not only the moment, but that the moment requires a change in that kind of investment?
I think you're ahead of the game here, because there's actually a bill that's been introduced into Congress called the Emergency Charitable Stimulus Bill. And that bill calls for a 10% payout requirement, just exactly what you said, a 10% payout requirement for 3 years. So it's only a temporary bill at the moment. Congress, the House of Representatives, is struggling with it to see whether they will include it in the next bailout package. But that bill would add $200 billion to the amount of money going out to the nonprofit community. So that would be a tremendous first step. And we're actually just tapping into it with our voluntary 10% payout requirement. That's what we're asking foundations and donor-advised funds to do, is to pay out a minimum of 10% this year. So we're doing it on a voluntary basis, basically to show that, yeah, we can do this, we should do this, we must do this. But there's the possibility of legislation coming down that will require it. And it's there's a related problem, though, that we have to be aware of, which is we are living in an age of what's being called gilded philanthropy, which where a bunch of very wealthy people and foundations control just about everything. They could determine what you get to see in a museum. They get to determine what diseases we're going to try to cure, right? Rather than having a democratically decided process for making these kinds of decisions, we now have this government outside of government making decisions. How our kids get schooled is being determined by very wealthy people and foundations. And so ultimately, we have to address this problem of excessive wealth disorder. We have to address the problem that people have just too much money, foundations have too much money. And one of the places, one of the ways to begin is to start giving back. And we're hoping to demonstrate that there's enough people who have hoarded this money willing to give back.
So as you're describing, and I think of the Koch brothers and what they've done when they've invested in different colleges and then the expectation of what they're to teach and what is the funded chair and what does the funded chair teach. I mean, and you've seen it. I mean, you've seen it over and over again, and you're absolutely right about the museums and what they can do. And so as I'm thinking about these incredibly interesting charitable individuals who then demand that you behave a certain way, and I keep thinking of them, and I want to really call them what they are, benevolent despots. Because that's exactly what they are. And what scares me, Alan, and why we need to have more of these conversations is we already know about money in politics. We already know about the revolving door. We already know about the lobbyists. We already see that how much money have they made, how many billions have they made during the time of the pandemic. We already know that they only are required, the foundations, to give 5%, and that was written in 1960, and they are swimming in cash today, so they're actually sitting on it. Then we find out that the Ford Foundation wants to borrow money and not spend their own damn cash. So you add all this together, and if you paint that picture, it's a picture of really not being patriotic. I'm so glad you called yourselves the patriotic millionaires, because you don't know this, but we begin every show with the voice of Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, because I want my audience to hear this every single day until the election, because I want them to remember what patriotism sounds like. I want them to remember what it is to be selfless. I want them to understand he knew he was risking his career, not millions, but his life's work to testify. All we're asking of these gazillionaires is not for them to give up their 17 homes, their Maseratis. They're going to be beyond wealthy even when we're done, but people will be better off around them because of what they've done. And
that's
to me,
exactly right.
it would make me smile. You know, instead of feeling threatened, it would make me smile.
Well, that's the part that I find so troubling, because all the research shows that people feel better when they help others. It's a given, and yet the rich are not giving. I mean, just to put it in perspective, the rich have been giving at a rate of 1% of their wealth for, say, the last 10 years. That's 1% when they're earning 10%. So there's a disconnect here. It's like they're just piling wealth on top of wealth. And there's no, as you said, there's no reason for it. What more are they going to buy? What is it exactly? Which painting are they going to hang in their living room that's worth more than somebody having clean drinking water? I just don't, this is a disconnect.
And let me just stop you, because they'll still have that painting and you could still have the drinking water. Alan Davis, I am so honored and proud that I can call you not only my friend, but someone that I totally, totally admire. He is a member of the Patriotic Millionaires. He's president of the Leonard and Sophie Davis Fund. He was the founder and president of Conservatory Paper Company, a wholesale distributor, of course, recycled paper, and a rich guy who gets it. So thank you so much for leading the way, Alan.
Thank you, Arnie.
All right, ciao. All right, everyone. This is the Thursday edition of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. We'll show you tomorrow.